Hello, everybody. This is episode 6. Our guest this week was Jeff Nations of the band Various Hands. Remember, you can follow us on Twitter at Rock Paper Podcast without the T, on Facebook, Rock Paper Podcast, and now on YouTube, Rock Paper Podcast.
You can find us on iTunes. You can go ahead and rate and review us. That would help out a lot. And feel free to subscribe. New episodes every Thursday.
This is Jeff Nations. Enjoy the show. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast, y'all. Welcome to Rock Paper Podcast, episode 6. My name is Chris Bumeter.
I'm Shane Presley.
Remember, you can follow us on Twitter, Rock Paper Podcast without the T, on Facebook, and we are now on YouTube as well, so you can get the episodes there. And as always, now officially on iTunes. Our guest this week, very good to have him, Jeff Nations, lead vocalist and guitarist for Various Hands. Thanks for coming on, man.
Thanks.
Almost forgot the name. I was like, oh, that'd be a good intro. Hey, thanks for coming on our show. I forgot what your band's called. Various Hands is a band. We were just talking here about the beautiful guitar you're playing.
Thank you.
Custom 22 said PRS.
Yes.
So thanks for coming on. We're shooting from a St. Louis Bread Co. Or Panera. I don't know what the official name is. I think in St. Louis, it's St. Louis Bread Co.
It is,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it started here.
Anywhere else you say that, and they look at you. What?
I heard that one of my professors in college said it started in Chicago or something, and it was called St. Louis Bread Co., but they had to change it to Panera. Started here, but in Chicago they had to change it to Panera because there were a lot of fans, like Blackhawk fans, who were like, hey, the Blues, and like, we don't want to go to some place called St. Louis Bread Co.
Right.
I don't know if it's true or not, but anyway. So thanks for coming on the show.
Fourth
of July. Did you have a good one?
It was wonderful. It was busy. We played. I played, and then we played some more. So it was a big music weekend. So I got very little time off. Although I did drink all day on the 4th and hang out in the pool, so that was good. But then I had to go play that night, so that was interesting.
I guess that's good. Then I just worked and I didn't really do anything. Yeah. And I'm not much like fireworks guy. Myself, so I was probably better doing something and jamming to music.
I didn't get to see any fireworks either, so
that's all right.
I'm with you there.
You probably saw them like 3 weeks after. You know,
I saw it on TV. It was good.
It's like the 2 days after 4th of July, people are shooting them off.
Right.
Like, what are you guys freaking doing?
Yeah, I heard plenty in my neighborhood on Monday, and I live in Afton, so I don't know where that really came from, but there were people shooting them off on Monday afternoons. So.
Get that America love going.
You can scroll through your Facebook feed on and see all of them there.
Right.
We just showed my son the videos on YouTube, and he was like, oh, the boom boom. That's right. You don't have to go anywhere. Don't have to worry about traffic. So let's talk about a little bit about your band. You guys got an EP coming out. Is it July 22nd?
July 22nd is the official worldwide release date.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah, very.
What's the name of the album?
Hypoluxo.
Hypoluxo. That's awesome. I like the custom, or the album art on it.
Thank you.
Very awesome.
Old buddy of mine did that one.
Yeah,
old high school, actually an old grade school buddy. I met him in 7th grade or so, ended up going to high school with him, and that was actually a photo that he did. He's a graphic designer out in Kansas City.
Hmm.
And I saw that on his Instagram profile like last summer and went, that's it.
That's
the one. So he was nice enough to let us use it and create a package around that. So yeah.
Awesome.
Artwork's awesome. That might be the most exciting part. Well, the music's good, but the artwork's definitely
cool.
The second most.
We are not very good at being music or doing anything, but our album art is awesome.
Right.
Well, awesome. I was listening to stuff the other night after work, and the stuff, it's some pretty good jams. Yeah,
thank
I
you.
Enjoyed it. So.
Thank you.
Very good stuff. So, how long have you guys been a band?
Oh, man. Officially, the full lineup has been together since, I think it was August of 2011, something like that. It was a project that started in, I think, like 2010. Late 2010, I started doing acoustic stuff under the name.
Yeah.
It was just I was getting out of my last band that was kind of starting to fizzle out, so I wanted to keep going with something. So I wanted to have something going before I put a band together, so I started writing the music myself and then went in and recorded. Recorded with a guy out at Webster University who was finishing off his audio engineer degree.
Yeah.
So recorded a lot of it at Webster University and then started putting ads out on Craigslist and, you know, said, here's the tunes, learn these, and basically found everybody through Craigslist.
Oh, that's nice.
So, and there's been a couple guys that have come and gone over the past, 3 years now?
Yeah.
3 years, really? God, we've been together that long, I know.
Ah, oh, jeez, get the reunion tour going.
I know, for God's sake.
God, those guys are just washed up, man. They've been around for so long, man. God. Well, that's awesome. You guys got shows coming up here? Or,
we do.
Loaded, just like a big list of shows?
Well, we've had a couple solid ones recently opening for some bigger names, and then we have July 18th is the CD release party.
Oh, awesome.
So we'll have that available on the 18th. That's at Plush in downtown St. Louis. Midtown, actually. And then that's also the first night of a 8-day tour for us. Oh, wow. So we're going to be hitting the road and then, you know, just pounding the pavement for the rest of the year.
Right. That's so awesome. That's exciting. It's going to be just a blast. And, like, I was in band in high school. Not that we were any good or anything. We've talked about it now. But like, that was always something that I think would just be a blast, just to be able to go out on the road and just play shows all the time. And I'm sure it's got its good and bad, you know. But it's just... That's, I think, part of the experience of being in a band.
Right.
It's like, if you're able to go out and just, like, actually tour and stuff, that's just going to be a blast.
It's a blast. It's a ton of hard work, and it's, you know, sleeping in cheap motels or sleeping in the car and, you know, carrying all your own crap and, you know, playing to, you know, 15 people a night sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes worse, sometimes better, but, you know, that's basically how you have to do it these days if you want to get the industry to notice you. So, you know, we're on board with that, and that's the plan.
Yeah, awesome.
Well, you guys have the... So you guys had pretty good success early on then, because I remember, I guess about maybe almost a year ago now, you guys played with The Urge opening.
Yeah, that was, probably a year and a half ago now.
Yeah.
Again, where does the time go?
It all blurs together.
Right.
So we just had Steve on last week talking about The Urge.
I saw that.
That was a lot of fun. And
Steve's a wonderful dude.
Yeah.
All those guys are. The Urge, they're all just super nice dudes, super professional.
Yeah. I probably first got to see you guys at Cicero's. Like, I guess that's about 2 years ago.
I remember that show, We had a fill-in drummer that night, Jeff Hall from Upright Animals. That was a fun show, though, from what I remember.
Yeah. It's just a neat little room there.
Yeah. That is a great room. That's always been one of the first few places I ever played back when I was, 16, 17, something like that. But I've always loved that room.
Yeah.
What are you thinking of the St. Louis music scene? I feel like now I'm kind of out of the loop in, like, the music, and I think it's just after having a kid, like, you know, I've lost touch. I used to, in college, was following music like crazy. Mm-hmm. Huge. What's your kind of your view on the music scene in St. Louis now compared to how maybe it was early 2000s? You know, do you think there's a really good, are you seeing some really good bands, you know, you guys playing with, or, you know, just what's
I am. That's kind of a difficult question. There are a lot of good bands, and the bands that are really good are doing it, you know, doing things the right way. I feel at the same time the scene has just kind of a lot of, I don't want to say, like, you know, diluted or you know, generic type stuff. Yeah. I don't know. I'm really, like, indifferent as to, you know, how I feel about the St. Louis scene lately.
Yeah.
And not that I'm dogging it or anything like that.
No, that's not
the idea. Just even some of these, like, local shows that we've been booking ourselves, where we're putting the bills together, it's like I'm almost scraping, you know, the bottom of my mind to figure out, like, you know, who are the bands that are doing well in town that, you know, that are good to work with, that are professionals, that, you know, handle themselves the right way. And it's been kind of tough lately to figure out, you know, those bands. And then when you do, you know, talk to them and all that, they're just as busy as we are, so they're not available and stuff like that. So it's really, I'm really kind of right in the middle of it lately.
Yeah, I got to imagine, and I bring this up every time, it's the social media thing and stuff, but, like, just because it's so prevalent, like, probably you guys are heavy in, like, having to promote outside of just your music, you know, doing Facebook and stuff like that. So I'm sure trying to find bands, there's probably so many more out there that you have to kind of seep through to see, you know, who do we want to play with, you know, because you can't just say, well, there's a band, let's just go play with
them,
you know. So I can understand probably the level of difficulty of really making sure that, because when you bring a band to play with you guys, it probably represents you guys as well.
That
if you bring a band in that just doesn't know what they're doing or whatever, it's going to kind of probably reflect too on you guys.
Right.
Hey, that's part of the bill, you know.
Exactly.
But I've always just been curious on the music scene because it's so different now than what it was with digital media and Facebook and Twitter and stuff like that. So you guys have pretty big on social media and stuff
we
like
are.
That, dealing with Facebook?
We are. We're huge on that. And there are obviously many other promotional outlets that you have to focus on. But, I mean, the social media is huge these days, of course. So that's, you know, that could sometimes almost take, you know, someone else separate to run that, you know, besides us, just because it's...
I was going to say, as busy as you guys probably are, are you able to keep up? Are you able to do it to your...
Yeah, we do it well. And that's, you know, the social media thing is a very fine line you have to toe, especially on Facebook, because... you know, just watching your numbers, your you know, not necessarily your likes, but all your engagement numbers and your insights and all that.
Yeah.
You know, you got to toe that line of, you know, where you're not posting 5 or 6 times a day because that just pisses people off.
Right. Yeah.
But
at
the same time, you can't be doing, you know, every 3 days because then that kind of pisses people off and you lose them there too. So it's like this really fine line you have to toe. I feel like Twitter, you know, and Instagram to an extent, you can kind of be a little more. frequent with those posts. But, I mean, Facebook is really kind of a fine line.
Yeah. I have a hard time. I mean, we kind of do our own, like, normally Shane kind of does Facebook for the podcast, and I do Twitter. Mm-hmm. And even then, I, like, have a hard time sometimes, just like, do I want to say this, or I don't want to post too much, because I'm like, I don't want to annoy people and be like, hey, look at this, look at our, you know, so I'm curious how bands, you know, do it too on the front.
Because we try to do about once a day, you know, if we got a lot of stuff to promote, which I feel like lately we have a ton, so it's, again, you got to pick and choose your spots and what you're going to throw at them this day, and
kind of a good problem to have too, though. Probably. It is. I mean, you gotta enjoy that. Man, I got all this stuff, you know, I gotta throw out there and stuff, which is awesome. You know?
Right.
It's good stuff. What's the music writing process for the band? You know, how do you guys go into it? So let's just say for like this EP you guys did, what was the process going into writing the album? Or
A couple of songs like RMA and The Fleeting Starlight, which are both on there. Those are songs that Zach, the guitar player, he and I wrote those probably within the first 6 months or so of him joining. Mm-hmm. And Zach is the only original member from the original lineup that's still with me. So he and I wrote those two songs, shortly after the full band got together. But usually with our writing process, one of us will come in with an idea of some sort, and sometimes it'll just be a riff, sometimes it'll be maybe like a chorus idea and a verse idea. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then the whole band will kind of jam on those and we'll kind of structure it out together. Other times I like to personally write something and have it completely done, structured, lyrics, melodies, all that stuff, and then bring it in and show it to everybody and say, here's kind of the, you know, here's what I've got, here's the basic idea, and then usually from there, you know, everyone will add their little elements, and they'll, you know, things will get changed, you know, some stuff might get cut, some stuff might get added, so, you know, as a songwriter, I go into a song, I have it all written out, I have it, you know, in my mind what it's supposed to sound like, the drums are supposed to be doing this guitar should do this, and then you go in and it comes out as something completely different.
Right,
for example, Memphis Decisions, the first single we're doing, Adam Worth, our bass player, wrote that song along with Zach, and then two other guys that they're buddies with, they were in a band, kind of like a side project thing for a short period of time, so they brought that song in about halfway done, and then presented it to Ben, the drummer, he and I, and then the whole band kind of wrote that one. So that was a really collaborative process that, you know, included people outside the band, too.
Right.
So, it, you know, it just kind of differs, but it's usually, one person bringing in an idea, and then we'll all kind of hash it out together and have our own little elements.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a good starting point, too.
It is.
When you're writing a song, you know, because it's hard probably to say, okay, let's just go in just nothing, you know, there and say, okay, let's just come up with something, because somebody's got to get the foundation, and I think it's good to, you know, come in with something, like you said, a song kind of completed, and then say, okay, let's see what we can build or adjust and tweak, and it probably comes out, you know, sometimes even more awesome.
Right.
Or whatever. Or it's just phenomenal the first time you bring it there.
Yeah, exactly.
Here's gold, guys. You're welcome.
Well, I tell you, Zach is has been really on top of that lately, too. We'll just, we'll be in rehearsals and, you know, setting up or whatever, and he'll start jamming on something, and we'll all just kind of go with it and jam on it for 8 or 9 minutes, and then kind of go, "What the hell was that?" that was just me dicking around. Like, okay, well, you know, maybe that can become something.
Yeah.
So he's been really good at that lately.
I think that's how "Get Over It" by the Eagles. I can't think of what the guitarist's name is now.
Joe Walsh.
Joe Walsh. Yeah. He just doing some kind of finger exercise. Like, what is that?
Really?
It started out like I was watching a documentary, like the opening riff of "Get Over It" from the Eagles. And that's how he's just like, oh, it's just something I toy around to get a little exercise on the guitar. And they're like, sounds beautiful. And
nice.
Well, I mean, just ended up rocking it out.
So right.
It was awesome. Enjoyed it. So what other type of stuff outside of music do you enjoy doing? Or
music?
I'm sure this is music's your thing. Right. And that's understandable. I mean, it's almost like probably a full-time job for you guys. I mean,
it is.
If you want to do it seriously,
right,
you can't just be like, let's go play music for 2 hours a week and jam out. So
right. I play with various hands. An old buddy of mine from high school, he and I have a acoustic cover duo that we do called the Town Drunks that we've been doing for 8 years. So usually Thursday through Saturday, he and I are playing music with that. And then Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, we host trivia around town. And then during the day, I'm a substitute teacher when school's in session. So I do that. I am engaged. So I'm planning a wedding currently.
Congratulations. That's a whole other monster in itself.
It is. We've given ourselves, we got engaged about a year ago. So we've had a nice, you know, we're not getting married till next August or anything. So we've got, you know, a nice long time frame. But I mean, I just feel not overwhelmed. It's great to be as busy as I am lately. And most of it's music related. But it's just go, 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 man. It's, you know, I've got 15 different things going on in my head at a time. And trying to keep them all straight, so it's draining sometimes.
Right, I understand.
I think that's the key to being successful is you got to hustle.
Yeah.
Like, it just, I mean, you got to constantly be out there plugging away at it and hoping you hit the right opportunity.
Yeah,
the right time.
Exactly.
So.
Exactly. And it's tough, man. The music industry is tougher now than it ever has been. You know, it doesn't seem to be changing anytime soon.
Yeah.
You know, I think that has to do with the internet and, you know, various other factors. But, I mean, my God, it's just a cutthroat industry lately. I mean, and I even talk to guys that are doing it, you know, professionally these days. And it's just like, holy crap, like, you're at that level and you're still doing things this way. You're still getting paid this little. Like, it's incredible. So, it's not all the glitz and glam that people tend to think it is.
Right. Well, it seems like that kind of ended. I mean, outside of, like, major pop stars, but after the 90s, because it seemed like the 90s were kind of a time where there were still bands that were... I mean, there's still bands out there making money, mm-hmm. but, like, that kind of seemed, I guess, maybe when the internet really took off is when it kind of seemed like making money from the big money isn't really there anymore. It's...
Right.
You know, in a sense, you kind of get those who really loved music and want to do it for a living because of love of music and not just because, oh, I'm going to go be a rock star, because that aspect almost isn't there anymore because it's so, like you said, cutthroat in the industry.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of, you know, dilutes some of the people who just want to go out there and I just want to get the fame and fortune or whatever.
Yeah. And I don't think anybody goes into it, you know, I would hope not many go into it with that mindset these days of, you know, I'm doing it for the fame and fortune because, you know, yeah, the fame might come, but the fortune, it's going to be a long road, man.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's tough. And it's frustrating, too. I mean, there's, you know, especially lately, I'm, you know, 29 years old, I'm going to be 30 in October, and I'm kind of getting to the point where it's like something needs to happen here because we're not seeing a whole lot of 30, 32, 33-year-old people getting signed to record labels and going out on tour these days.
Yeah.
So, you know, I feel like I'm kind of working against the clock as well in that aspect.
Right.
It's frustrating.
Yeah. Well, that's all right. You got to think, you know, people probably look at musicians and stuff, and they gotta understand. I mean, you're gonna be married soon. You got other. It's not just like you just get to go out and play music, and that's all you're. You know, they gotta understand that you got bills you gotta pay, and you gotta make a living, and you know, you can't just. It's not all just I'm doing this just because I just want to play music. You know, there is a financial side that you have to, you know, make a living off of it.
Yeah.
It may not be the number one factor, but people got to be realistic. It's just like any other job. You got to make a living off.
Yeah, that's
it.
The end game.
Yeah,
like with anything else, of course. So.
Yeah. So Shane's getting married in September, right?
Yeah.
I just got recently married
last
August. So the whole wedding planning side of it, are you letting the fiance kind of handle it or?
No, we're doing very well working in tandem.
There you go.
You know, I'm just excited about it as she is.
Yeah.
And we've been together for over 8 years now.
Yeah.
So we've been living together for 6 of those years.
Yeah.
Like there's really not a whole lot of surprises, you know, anymore in terms of, you know, relationship or anything like that. So, I mean, we're both very into it and we're both sharing the workload.
That's a fun process. You know?
Yeah, it is.
It's funny
is.
After you get to the end of it and it's married, you just don't even know where the time went. You're like, wow, we just did that whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Same thing. I was very involved in everything of mine, coming up. But the planning and everything, I've been very hands-on with all of it. As much as, I think that's like a very, old school kind of look on to the things of people that think the women are going to do it all.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's my wedding also.
Right.
So I was like, I want to have it just a, you know, have a good time.
Yeah, exactly.
So I want all my, you know, taste in there too.
Yeah.
I'm so indifferent. Like my wife was probably like, what do you think of this? I'm like, okay, that's cool.
Cause
I don't care. Like, and not that I don't care about the day. Like the day was awesome, but like, I'm just very not picky about things.
Right.
And I can just whatever, as long as you're happy, I'm cool. Because I just, as long as we're there and we're enjoying our, you know, that's fine.
Right.
Like, I don't really mind what the centerpieces are. On
thing.
If you're happy with them and we can get it done. Awesome.
Yeah.
So.
She was asking me about flowers and I don't care about that, but like, But the reception and stuff, I planned the music and, I got a band and a DJ and all that stuff. So all that stuff I'm passionate about, and so obviously I wanted my 2 cents in there. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. I'm kind of the same way on the flights. Like, hey, you can do the flowers. Like, that doesn't pertain to me, but everything else, it's, you know, you run it by me, I'll run it by you, we'll get it done.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
what are some of your musical influences? Like, who did you grow up listening to? And, because you're my age, too, so...
How much time do you have?
Let's just go. I mean, I'm ready for the marathon here.
I grew up, my dad's also a guitarist and a vocalist, so I grew up listening to him. And basically listened to a lot of the same stuff he and my mom listened to, which he was big into, like, you know, REO Speedwagon, Boston, you know, Rush, just a lot of the old, you know, classic stuff like that. So I grew up, you know, listening to that kind of stuff. When I was probably about, I don't know, 6 years old or so, my grandpa bought me my first Phil Collins cassette.
Oh, yeah.
And so I'm still just a massive Phil Collins Genesis fan.
Yeah.
And he's one of my top three. So I grew up, you know, listening to a lot of that, basically the classic rock stuff. And then once I started playing guitar, which was, you know, fifth grade or so, you know, around that age, I was getting into Offspring and Green Day and, you know, all the alternative stuff that was coming around then.
Yeah.
And then, like, once I hit, you know, seventh, eighth grade, I started going back and, you know, rediscovering, like, Led Zeppelin and, you know, Lynyrd Skynyrd and Aerosmith and, and all that kind of stuff. So I was really big into classic rock, and that was basically all I listened to all through high school. And then once I met my fiance, she kind of started turning me on to some of the, like, cooler indie rock stuff, like, you know, Arctic Monkeys and Black Keys, Cold War Kids. And ever since she and I met, like, that's, I've been basically into indie rock, you know, for the last 8 or 9 years, and that's been my go-to. I still love all the classics.
Yeah.
You know, Steely Dan, we got to see them live a few years ago. Saw Hall & Oates back in the day, which is just incredible. So I've still got all the, you know, all my roots and all that, and they're still a very big influence for me. But in terms of, like, direct influence these days, it's, you know, a lot of bands like, you know, Minus the Bear and bands along those lines. Just kind of the newer indie rock stuff. And I feel strongly that, you know, that scene, kind of that underground, you know, indie rock and roll scene is really the worthwhile music that's coming out these days. Because the mainstream stuff is, you know, a load of horse crap, if you ask me.
That's always been my, like, I feel like listening to music now, like, I have a hard time listening to, I don't listen to even the radio anymore, because I just, when I hear it all just sounds just like kind of generic alternative rock. And I'm not trying to take anything away from any of the bands out there now, but, like, I guess it seems like after, and when I was in college, the big thing was, like, screamo and that type of thing. And so I was big into that at the time. And then whether it's maturity level, like, you start to mature musically, you just want to, like, listen to something else that's not so this stuck in this genre. And, like, that's where I started to listen to all sorts of everything. And, you know, I'm kind of the same way as you, as I grew up listening to riding in the car with my parents. I was, like, my mom is oldies. So, like, that's what I started listening to, like, 103.3 here in St. Louis. I think it's still around. Like, it's still that. But, like, listen to oldies and just, like, your taste for music, if you're locked into one genre, like, you're missing out on so much. And I think not just from, like, an enjoyment level, but, like, creative levels. Like, if you only listen to just alternative music the whole time, I think it's going to reflect and kind of barricade you into a creative wall, you know? And I think the more people listen to different kinds of music, whether it's rock, rap, Broadway, anything, it expands your musical sense. And
absolutely.
Makes you probably a better musician, because, like, especially being a vocalist and guitarist, you know, you got those guitar influences, but I know just, like, I envy a lot of vocalists who you listen to different styles, and you're like, man, I like how they're doing that.
Right.
And it probably expands on your own vocal, just want to try different things and stuff, so.
Yeah,
I don't
absolutely.
Know, anybody who says that I only listen to this style of music, it just kind of, that always bugged me. But if you was to ask me that in college, I would be like, if it's not heavy, I don't even care.
Yeah.
Don't let me listen to it.
Right.
But now it's just, you know, you grow up and you're got a little bit different.
Yeah. And I found myself lately, too, it's funny because, you know, when I was in high school, I have a younger brother who's 3 years younger than me. And, you know, back then, like I said, I was into, you know, a lot of classic rock. I was, you know, kind of getting out of my Metallica phase back then. But he was real big into, like, the pop punk scene. And some of that stuff, so, you know, like the Blink-182 and Fall Out Boy and all that, and I just despised that stuff, and I gave him so much crap for the stuff that he listened to. I mean, we would go round and round, but over the past year or so, I have found myself now going back and listening to a lot of that stuff that he did, like The Format. He was big into them, and then, you know, obviously Nate got into Fun. So, you know, he showed me Fun. I thought that was incredible, and then I just recently got into The Format, and then I'm finding myself going back and buying, like, Panic at the Disco records, which I was just, again, vehemently against back in the day, and now I listen to them, like, holy crap, this is awesome. So I found, like, a lot of those old, like, kind of punk bands that he was listening to that I gave him relentless crap for. Like, now I'm finding myself really, really enjoying those.
I realize that's the downfall. If you listen, if you hate any sort of music, you're going to enjoy it later on. Because you're going to start to see it in a different, because I was the same way with, and this is a different genre, like, Broadway. I remember going to college, going to a musical, and I was like, how do you listen to this stuff? Like, and everyone's like, Rent, everybody. And now, like, I enjoy that movie, like, now being almost, you know, 29, I'm like, I enjoy musicals. I, you know, it's just like, anything I've despised, you're like, that band sucks. I'll realize, like, now I'll listen to, like, oh, that's not so bad. Yeah. I can enjoy it. Right. Just, like, anything if I just, I guess here soon I'm going to enjoy Miley Cyrus or whatever.
I hope that's not the case.
Right, but, I know. Pop's probably the only difference is where I kind of see through that whole just put together. But any other band or anything, I used to be like, these guys suck. Now I'll be like, oh, that's a good song.
Yeah.
It's like at first a guilty pleasure, but then you're like, oh, man.
Right. Right, yeah, it's funny how that works.
So you said being a Phil Collins fan, and you mentioned earlier being a drummer. Do you ever try singing and drumming like Phil, or do you?
I have. My dad and I played in a cover band. Technically, the band's still together, but we only play about once a year. But it's a group called All Over the Road, and I joined them kind of by accident when I was about, like, 17 or so. They needed a fill-in guy because they never really had a permanent drummer. Mm-hmm. And they just kind of started asking me to come and play some percussion stuff, and then little by little I kept bringing a bigger drum kit and a bigger, you know, the congas and a cymbal, and then it was the congas, a cymbal, and a snare, and then, you know, the snare and the kick, and just, you know, until I finally had my full kit in there, and I was kind of a full-time member. But, I sang and drummed for some of that stuff. It was a band of seven guys, and everybody could sing, everybody could harmonize, so, you know, I did my part there. But, it's tougher than it looks.
Cool. You know, I can imagine.
If I have the choice, I'd rather just focus on the drumming rather than trying to do the singing, too. But, it's something.
I mean, you see a lot of guitar singers, drumming, and there's only a couple out there. You know, I know, like, Don Henley and, and Phil Collins were, like, the two that come to mind. But, yeah, I just imagine that's, like, got to be the most difficult thing in music, trying to manage both of those.
Yeah, and I found myself, like, dumbing down a lot of the stuff drum-wise when I had to sing. You know, I could keep the beat, but, you know, if you're asking me to do, like, you know, Mike Portnoy-type fills while I'm singing, you know, a Phil Collins high note or something, like, forget about it. So
I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure AC Slater sang for Zach Attack on Saved by the Bell. I'm just saying, don't leave him out, too, okay? You're gonna take away some of his glory.
Well, and the other big guy that was, I think, the drummer for Cowboy Mouth, he was their lead singer. Do you remember that band?
Yeah.
I think they were a big 90s band, but I think, every time you mention Cowboy Mouth, they're like, oh, yeah, it's the drummer that's the lead singer, right? Yeah. I guess. I mean, I only know the one song, but...
Yeah.
I would have to imagine you'd have to probably limit your drumming ability. Not limit, but, like, if you're... I couldn't imagine singing, doing anything majorly complex while you're drumming. So I would think that would kind of hold you back, but obviously not... I mean, a band like the Eagles, you know, question their drumming, you know... They're just a phenomenal band.
Right. Yeah, and of course Genesis had, you know, Chester Thompson also playing drums, so Phil could, you know, do both if he had to. But
I'll find a video on YouTube of some guy just wailing, singing, and just double bass and just nailing. I'll be like, okay, I was wrong. Yeah. Point taken.
Right.
Thanks a lot. Jeez. That's all right. So I, like, listen to a lot of stuff, like using Spotify and things. Are you guys... digital music wise, like getting into putting your music on Spotify and all that stuff?
Or we are on Spotify. Pandora is a tough one to crack.
I don't know how any of that works. Like, I know Steve said there's, like, only, like, you don't really make too much money, Steve Ewing from there, from like Spotify. iTunes a little more fair, you get your cut. Mm-hmm. But I don't know how you even get into that. Like, how you.
Spotify we're on, and that's through our distribution. They take care of that. Pandora, they have, anybody can submit music to that, you know, so if you have a professionally recorded album, you know, they have a submission page, and I think it takes something like 3 to 6 weeks for them to give you a decision. I submitted our first album, they came back and said no. I don't think I've submitted Hypoluxo yet, but I submitted a couple older albums too that, you know, from my earlier bands too, which were all professionally recorded. The one, Science Hill, we were on a record label for a while, and they came back and said no to that too.
Did they say why?
So no, they don't. They don't give you a reason. And if you can read, like, the frequently asked questions on there and what goes into it, and they really don't.
There's some guy just sitting there like, I don't like this music. Right. He's not gonna make it. Right. Like, some guy's just sitting in the cubicle like, all you do is listen to music and you tell them if they make it or not.
I would bet it's probably got something, you know, I'm sure they probably look at your numbers and, you know, are they selling big time? Are they, you know, what do their social media look like? I would figure that has at least some kind of play into it, but I don't know. But yeah, the pricing thing, there's a whole group of like big names that are going against the whole Spotify thing based on those on the profits and whatnot.
Yeah, because
the royalties.
It sounds like, I mean, because it's different. You know, for iTunes, you're downloading an actual, you're purchasing a song from where Spotify, $10 a month, and you can listen to anything as many times as you want or whatever. And so I can see where there's no money going to the, or minimal money going to the artist.
You're roughly getting, you know, when I look at our sales reports on Spotify, for every, you know, play that you get, you're basically earning something like 0.003 cents or something ridiculous. Which, but for an unsigned artist, that's it's whatever. Something. Who cares? It's the exposure. You're on Spotify. That's true. Cool. You know, right. If you're somebody like David Byrne from Talking Heads is a big advocate for the whole movement against Spotify these days. He's almost spearheading it. And he's been speaking out a lot about against it lately. But for someone like him, you've already done your time. You've made tons of money off your records.
Right.
Well, obviously, you're going to complain about this, and I don't blame them.
Yeah.
But I guess the goal, ideally, you would hope that anybody that listened to it and liked it would go buy, go to your site or iTunes or whatever and purchase it, legally and all this stuff, and you actually get your pay. And so, I don't know. That's why, as a fan of music, I'm constantly buying albums and stuff and supporting these, especially local.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I don't get how why you would want to sit there and listen to it on Spotify all the time and not own a copy of it.
Yeah.
Well, essentially, because I use Spotify, and it's just like, essentially, you have it. It's as if you purchased it, but you didn't pay the artist, and you didn't buy the track, but you're paying for the service. So, I can see why people don't just go buy the album, because they have an iTunes store that they can listen to anything they want. So that, from like a just consumer way, I can see why, but from a artist side, absolutely, I can see why people wouldn't want to go on Spotify, because that's kind of a one-sided thing, where Spotify's getting all these subscription money and stuff, and it's the artist is, here's a few crackers for your house, whatever.
Here's a few crumbs.
But
no, I do love Spotify, and Pandora's been like a godsend, man. Like, I found so much good stuff on there, especially if you're, the station I keep going back to lately is Phoenix. And the stuff that pops up on there, besides the Phoenix stuff, is just absolutely, it's song after song, just awesome music.
Yeah.
So that's, I'm a big, I love what they do, and, they've opened, I've found several bands that I've actually gone out and bought the albums for. So that's, that's great, because, if I find one or two songs from the same band, I'll finally go, I don't care if the rest of the album sucks, I'll buy it and listen to it and give it a shot.
Right.
And, if it sucks, it sucks.
Yeah.
I got a buddy, Patrick Sweeney, who's a blues rock guy, and actually had Dan Auerbach of the Black Keys produced his album.
Okay.
And he's up on Spotify, or on Pandora, and he's got a song called Them Shoes, and it, for whatever reason, however they work it, they're, whatever, I don't know, but anyway, however they link artists together, he ended up getting, thrown on the Black Keys channel.
Okay.
And stuff with it, and, so that song has become like a monster for him. It's all over. And I've talked to him about it too. How he's getting, people are coming to the shows based on hearing him on Pandora, and that's
whole, awesome.
Yeah, that's the whole idea. Is because obviously Black Keys blew up huge, and everybody's listening to them. But now he's just being sort of associated with them. Now he's starting to put people in the seats even more so than he was before.
Yeah.
Just because they've heard one song or whatever, or started listening to the rest of his stuff. Just from Pandora.
So that's killer.
Yeah, so it's really it's a neat service. It works, but
yeah,
that's what you ultimately, I think, you would want, is people come out and support you. Then after that, hearing something.
Yeah. So, are you guys gonna be the pioneers to bring MySpace back?
I doubt it. I loved MySpace back in the day. I just thought it was the coolest thing. From a musician standpoint, it was just awesome. And then it was just that one update that did that redesign that just killed it immediately.
Killed it. And Facebook's user, You're never going to get all those. MySpace, I remember it was huge for music, and that was the place to go if you wanted to find music or if you were a band to upload stuff. And it's kind of a shame now, because I don't know if there's a place. We talked with Steve kind of about STL Punk back in early 2000s, I guess, where that was kind of a good place, because we were talking about there's no real place to go and just say, okay, who's playing in St. Louis tonight? I don't know if, Shane, if you know of any other websites that are actually strictly dedicated to.
No, everything. I find out about my show just constantly checking, show websites like the Pageant and whatever, and the different venues, and going to their Facebook pages, and they obviously on Facebook they put all their events, so I just go through and I RSVP to all kinds of events, so I keep track of everything. There's no really a site to get a nice rundown of what's happening.
Yeah, there was a website that I worked for. I think they were up from 08 to maybe 20, 11 or something. It was MetroMix.com, which was just an entertainment website. It's a national website, but kind of each city was run. Like, for example, in St. Louis, it was run by Channel 5 News.
Okay.
And my my fiance worked for them, so I started writing some freelance stuff for them. But they were like a big aggregator of just all the events, whether it was music or you know, musicals or sports or whatever. Like, they had it all on that website, and I thought it was a great site. And then it just I think eventually National took it over and dissolved the local stuff.
Right.
So,
probably like, oh, we don't care as much as this anymore.
Right.
This is a shame.
Riverfront Times does like a weekly thing, like trying to. They do more like when they're announced shows. Like they'll put a thing out, and but they don't really. It's not as much like a weekly, like, hey, here's what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
But they do also a lot of local and more national acts that are playing in town, but.
Yeah, and I feel like the RFT is just—they've got their stable of 10 or 15 local bands, and that's all they focus on. They don't give a shit about or crap. Can I say shit or crap on this?
Not anymore. No, we cancel the show. No, absolutely, you're totally good. Yeah, we'll just have to close the show down, start all over. That's 35 minutes.
Keep it family friendly.
Yeah. No, totally good.
Just reminded me of there's a comedian Henry Phillips I'm a big fan of, and he's got a movie. Punching the Clown, and there's a scene in the movie where he's gonna play a song on the radio. He's sitting in the studio with the guy, and he's like, "Oh wait, this song's got shit in it." And he's like, "He goes, okay, well, when it gets to that point, just point at me. I'll turn it down, and you can just say crap or something over." And he's like, oh, "Okay, yeah, all right." So they get going, and he's playing the song, and then he's like, So he points and he goes, "Shit! I mean, crap!" So gets all nervous and screws it up. And so anyway, that just came to mind.
That's a movie.
Yeah, it's called Punching the Clown.
I think I've heard of that one.
Yeah, it's kind of an independent thing, but Henry's a super talented, funny guy.
Like, okay.
He's a musician, comedian. He plays these silly songs and along with doing like half stand up stuff. So. But yeah, he's one of my favorites.
Gotcha.
It seems like I said, I haven't been following music as much as I did in college. But like, are there a lot more venues in St. Louis than what there? Because when I was in, this is even high school, it was like the Creepy Crawl, which I don't think is that even
around? That's long gone.
Gone, yeah. Creepy Crawl.
Thank God.
The Pageant and Pops that I remember distinctly is like, and there's like the Pit in Wentzville.
Yeah.
So what are some of the other big venues? Or they're just, because it seems like there's shows everywhere, and I'm just.
Actually, there's a lot of venues that just been opening up pretty recently. Mm-hmm. A lot of stuff on Manchester and in the Grove area. They got a couple of nice venues that opened up recently with the demo, which I guess I just read that they're kind of on hold at the moment with the sound.
I saw that today. Yeah.
But then there's the Ready Room, and then there's Atomic Cowboy. There's a lot going on, and then there's. Yeah, there's some really great venues around town, and and Plush,
Plush is awesome, and I keep telling people, because they've been open for, I don't know, what, 2-3 years now, maybe, and still a lot of people haven't heard of them, and I feel like they could easily become the next Mississippi Nights with the caliber of acts they're getting in there lately.
Yeah,
that's a great room, and then Firebird is also
Firebird.
Always awesome.
Yeah.
And they do a lot. I mean, they do music. They do a lot of comedy lately, too.
I was there last night for Doug Benson. So that was, That was fun.
Awesome. Yeah. I saw, did you go to Kyle Kinane a few weeks ago?
No, I didn't make it. I've seen him there, but not the last one.
Okay. That was the first comedy show I've seen there. That was one of the only comedy shows I've seen.
Well, that's what's pretty neat about Firebird is it's kind of become like that sort of alternative comedy scene, because a lot of these guys are not big enough for the Pageant and getting too big for the Funny Bone and stuff, so they're kind of in that middle. And the Firebird's been a nice spot for them to go, and they'll sell it out.
Yeah,
250 seats or whatever it is, and it's a nice spot. You know, like it's a a lot of these. I know Hannibal Buress was there, and like I said, Doug Benson last night. There's a lot of Brian Posehn. There's a lot of these comedians coming through town, and
It sounds like St. Louis is kind of like picking up in the sense of like, because. I remember the Funny Bone, and again, this is because I'm probably just not cold. Like, I just didn't ever go out or do anything, you know. But I remember going to the Funny Bone, and like I said, those music venues. But now it just seems like there's stuff everywhere for all different types of, you know, comedy or music or whatever. And it's kind of exciting to, you know, I love St. Louis, even if I don't look like I get out there much, you know. But I have a lot of pride in the city, knowing that it's starting to kind of really take off or maybe it's been taking off, and really kind of pushing a lot of creative different sides from music.
Yeah.
To me, that's exciting because, you know, the Midwest, you know, a lot of times when people say, you know, go to do things, it's the coast, whether it's L.A. or New York.
Right.
And getting a Midwest kind of St. Louis getting maybe thrown into that would be awesome, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I think it seems like sometimes we would get skipped. Like, it'd be Chicago and, like, Nashville and then, like, Kansas City maybe. Right. But so for whatever reason, a lot of bands would skip over St. Louis, and finally starting to get a lot of, you know, opportunities here where people are coming to town. And I think it's it's definitely growing and getting stronger as the community and as all these different outlets for various forms. I mean, for the longest time we only had, like, you know, the arena rock and stuff, or the, like, the pageant and things.
Mm-hmm.
But now we're getting so many, like you said, like the indie rock scene and stuff. These guys are coming through and they're having a lot more rooms to play, and it's other various forms of art of all sorts. And
yeah,
you don't have to kind of conform to what was already there, you know, the standard and stuff. You can do your own thing, and that's what's neat about it.
Right. Yeah, I feel like the St. Louis in terms of music still has a long way to go in terms of being open-minded about a lot of the stuff that's out there. And I hear people that are from, you know, L.A. or New York or, you know, even Nashville for that matter, about how closed-minded St. Louis seems.
Yeah.
I've experienced it firsthand as well, like going out and playing in those other towns. The group I was with, Science Hill, prior, you know, to Various Hands, we had kind of like this beach rock, funk, reggae type sound, like, was not conducive to St. Louis at all. Right. Shouldn't have been coming out of St. Louis. But we'd go to, like, we did a big 2.5 month tour at one point, and we went down to Florida, we did New York, we did L.A., and going to any of those towns, and, you know, talking to people afterwards, and they're like, well, you know, where are you guys from? Are you from, like, Los Angeles, or where are you from? Like, no, we're from St. Louis. And they're like, Missouri? Yeah, and they're like, no, you're not, you're kidding. Like, that's a joke.
Yeah, get, like, the hell out of here.
We're from St. Louis. Like, no, you're from California. Like, no, dude, come on. Like, we're from St. Louis. Yeah. And they were just, like, blown away. So, you know, and then we'd come back to St. Louis and play, and, like, it's kind of people looking at us going, like, what the hell is this supposed to be? So, you know, everybody's got their little, you know, niches and
right.
and stuff like that, but I feel like St. Louis, it's well on its way, but still, yeah. I think, has a ways to go in terms of accepting a lot of newer, you know, original styles of music.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't seem like, there hasn't been a ton of big, I mean, St. Louis bands have come out that made
mm-hmm.
mainstream. I mean, I can... You know, The Urge, and then, like, Story of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
Ludo. Yeah, exactly. That's really the three that come straight to mind that I can think of that have really made it out of St. Louis.
Right.
And, again, when you got, you know, Chicago and Nashville right on your borders, yeah. there's a lot of, I hear a lot of guys that move out to those areas to try and, you know, make it out of there. But
mm-hmm.
It definitely seems like the indie, like, genre, or I don't even know if you can call it necessarily a genre now. Because, like, when you think of indie, I think if it's somebody like who's trying to do something a little different and not just like, oh, you're indie because you're doing something. I don't know what it is. But it seems like that kind of idea is getting more mainstream, and maybe kind of kicked off with, like, the Black Keys and stuff. But, like, do you see it being, like, kind of devastated by its own popularity as it starts to get bigger? Like, people trying to market it and...
It's an interesting point. No, I get what you're saying. It's an interesting question. You look at bands kind of like... I don't know, I would say Capital Cities, but that's a bad example because they've got enough, I think, like, poppiness to them that they'll, you know, do fine on, like, the mainstream level. But even looking, like, at a band like, who did I see? Like, Cold War Kids. Well, a better example would be, like, Twin Forks, which we opened for them on Monday night, last Monday night at Firebird, and that's Chris Caraba from Dashboard Confessional.
Okay.
It's his new project, and it's totally different from Dashboard. It's, like, this kind of upbeat, folky... indie rock type thing. It almost sounds a little bit like Mumford & Sons, but not as repetitive. Like, every song actually sounds different.
Yeah.
And then it's Chris Caraba singing.
We're having Mumford & Sons on the show next week. Thanks a lot for screwing us over. No, I'm
sorry. But, like, for that, like, that show, you know, I mean, Chris Caraba, Dashboard Confessional, was huge back in the early 2000s.
Sure.
I mean, they were selling out a pageant and all that, and I think the final head count on Monday night was something like 130.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So it was a great crowd. The people that were there were awesome. They went and bought stuff from, you know, from us, from Twin Forks, and from the band that was on tour with them. You know, they were really warm and receptive to us. It didn't seem like they really, you know, knew who we were or anything, but
yeah.
You know, met a lot of nice folks. But I feel like the venues that kind of cater more toward those indie rock bands, I'm always impressed with the number of people that actually do come out to those.
Yeah.
Because, you know, even like I saw Cold War Kids at Plush last year, and they've been around for, it's got to be going on like 10 years now or something like that, yeah. And they've had their, you know, their popularity and whatnot. But even still, I thought Plush might have been a little bit big for them, but they, I mean, packed the place. So I'm always really pleasantly surprised to see the numbers that actually come out for these indie rock groups that are, you know, pretty relatively unknown, you know, outside of an underground sense.
I think it's like my concern would be like once you get a few bands from like the indie scene that make it big, then because that seems like that style that they're doing is what's going to be marketed as indie. And so like bands aren't going to get that opportunity, though they are, you know, part of the indie. And I'm just afraid that anytime they can make money, people seem to mess it up and just ruin a genre, you know? And I'm just curious if you kind of see with the insurgence of some of those bands that it's going to a negative side of it, or if it just, you know, indie bands are still being able to get that opportunity to speak, you know what, you guys are doing your own thing and it's awesome. I'm just, anytime I think of a genre and I know how whenever there's money involved and they can make money, they're going to market this as this certain genre, and then it ruins it for the rest of the bands out there that are just actually doing, you know.
Well, and a perfect example of that is Fun.
Right.
I mean, they were a format, had their own thing going on, and then Fun's first album is still one of the most incredible albums, probably one of the best albums of the last 10 years. I mean, in terms of originality and just something that has never been done before.
He's got such a great voice.
He does. Right. And so, you know, that the first album, Aim and Ignite, is just absolutely incredible. And I was stoked for Some Nights when that came out, and then I listened to it and went, what the hell, there's auto-tune on it, there's all these, like, hip-hop beats, like, what the hell? And, you know, then come to find out it was Kanye West producer that did it. And, like, and it sounds so hipster to say, but, like, it just pisses me off to no end that everybody is a fan of Fun now.
Yeah.
You know, and I love it for them because Nate has worked his ass off. I mean, like, that guy has been through more hardships in the music industry than anybody else that I've, you know, read about or heard of. So, I mean, I applaud him, the fact that he actually made it to where he wanted to be, but the fact that you've got the same idiots, you know, out there listening to Lady Gaga and Katy Perry are also fans of Fun. It's God damn it. You know?
And then if Fun, like, if they try and do something any remotely different, everybody who wore those kind of jump on the bandwagon of that band are going to be like, well, we want it to be more like Some Nights.
Right.
Or, you know, and then they get dropped because their sales aren't as good because the mainstream whatever scene wants it to be exactly what it was at first, and they don't understand that, you know, it would probably, because they got a tour on that album for some time.
Yeah.
I'm sure they probably toured probably a couple of years on it.
Yeah.
And you don't want to go in and just make the same album again.
Right,
I mean, as an artist, that would probably drive you mad.
Yeah.
But as a consumer, they probably don't, most casual people don't understand that you can't just go in, unless you want to do it for the money, and just make the same album over and over again, because it's going to creatively just drive you nuts.
Right.
So it's just a shame from, like I said, their point of view. Because
and
attention spans of the consumer now are just, or just the fan are just gone, because it's like you can like this and then a year from now you don't even
realize. And the labels are the same way too, because they got, you know, even if you screw up, well, we got 9 more people that are banging at the door and we're gonna bring them in and do the same thing we did with you.
Right.
So
that's what's kind of frustrating too. It's like Nate's always been, you know, who he is and doing his thing, and it's been great, and it's like, and as I do it all the time with bands I like, I'm like, hey, check this out, and then nobody really responds to any of it, and all of a sudden they'll get that one hit that breaks them, you know, and people are like, oh, I love them, just like that, like you're talking about Fun, and it's like, yeah, but they've been doing it for so long, it's like you could have been enjoying this 10 years ago,
right?
And that's what I mean. As a fan, I get also kind of get selfish, because I want the bands that I love to stay small,
right?
And playing the clubs that I can, you know, where I can interact. I don't want them to play these giant arenas where, you know.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's kind of a balance, but.
Yeah. And, man, those shows when they're like a more intimate environment, even the pageant where you can get up close, like it's so much more enjoyable than going and seeing. I saw, and this was years ago, Green Day at Scott Train. It just like, there's just no, you don't feel like the music as much as you would at the pageant or a smaller venue, because they're right there and the crowd's crammed together, you know, it's just something about it that just, and but I'm sure they're gonna, not gonna mind, because like I said, the financial side of it, you can't.
Yeah. And you absolutely want them to do that and have their longevity so they can keep releasing albums that you can enjoy for years to come.
Exactly. You can't hate them for going big, because odds are it's probably not like they're saying, hey, we're not this big yet. Hold on. It's all the record company that's going to oversaturate and push them to the radio to play seven times an hour, which drives me mad. But.
Yeah. And I firmly believe, too, and I've always been a strong believer that, you know, any band that's worth their salt that is worth signing to a record label in the first place, it can be the next biggest thing. Like, it can just be huge and have that kind of longevity. Green Wheel, if you remember them, from St. Charles.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Awesome band. And they kind of got, I think they kind of got, from the stories that I've heard, they kind of got screwed out of their deal with Island. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, they're a perfect example. They were a band that could have been absolutely huge had the label put the right promotion behind them and stayed on them. Like, but they just didn't, and, you know, now, unfortunately, they're all back to working their day jobs and playing in cover bands and that.
That's a crazy story. Yeah.
It is. It is. And I love those guys, man. Ryan Jordan is still one of the best vocalists I've ever heard. So I was, I mean, yeah, it's depressing hearing their story. But yeah, I mean, I you know, any band that's worth their salt can have the longevity if the record label will focus on them enough.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And that's basically why a lot of bands, I mean, are still doing it. You hear everybody complaining, oh, you don't need a record label these days. Like, you know, you can do it all yourselves. Well, no, we can't, because we need those contacts that the record labels have so we can go out and tour and open for, you know, the bands that are selling out the pageant a lot. Like, we can't do that on our own.
Right.
And I mean, I've tried, and, you know, even recently, I've just taken to, you know, looking up what, you know, more popular indie bands are going on tour, have a new album coming out, and going straight to their management or their booking and saying, hey, what are the tour plans for these guys? Here's who I have. Any way we can hook them up? And it's, you know, it's always, well, we don't have anything on the table right now. We'll let you know. Or, no, we've already got support lined up.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, okay, how the hell do I break into it on my own then? You know, it's, we need those contacts that the labels can get you.
That's interesting. I've never thought of, like, that side of the music industry that needs like that, because it's always, you always hear, like, well, with music, people can make music, you know, they don't, the big labels are going to be gone, and obviously a lot more smaller labels are coming around, which are probably helpful, but yeah, like, you can't just go out and be like, okay, I'm going to do all this on my own, because it probably takes a bit of out of pocket too to even try and manage that. And like you said, contacts, it's all about who you know too. That helps, and being able to get into, you know, some of these places.
Yeah. It is, yeah. The band that opened for the other band that was touring with Twin Forks last week is called Siren, and they're from Denton, Texas, and they were incredible. They're killer. I mean, just kind of like a very like ambient, kind of dreamy indie rock band. They had a, you know, a lot of instrumentation going on. But they put on a great show. Like, the people there had acted like they've seen them before, but they got a great response and all that. And I was talking with a couple of them after the show, and I'm like, so, you know, what label are you guys on? They said, we're not on the label. And I kind of looked at him. I think they could kind of tell, like, I gave him this look, like, what? Then why are you here? How are you here? Yeah. And they said, well, we're under Creative Artist Agency, which is one of the biggest booking agencies in the nation. That's got, you know, they got all the big names. So it's like, okay, well, there's that. So then the next question is, how did you hook up with them without being on the label? You know, just kind of all these, like, you know, kind of, I guess, double-edged swords, for lack of a better matter, or lack of a better term. But, yeah, just stuff like that. You know, it's again, it all leads back to being extremely frustrating when, you know, it's like, you read half the stuff that says, well, you need to do it this way if you're looking to get noticed, and then you read something else that goes, no, you need to do it this way. And it's like, well, that just went against exactly what I just read, you know? Like, how the hell am I supposed to do it?
Stop messing with my mind.
Right.
Jeez. Well, I know you got to get going here, man. Appreciate you coming on. We're gonna wrap the show off with a song from the new EP.
Yes.
What song was it? Your
Memphis Decisions.
Memphis Decisions. So that'll play the podcast out. And,
great.
People check it out. But again, Various Hands, man. Appreciate you coming on.
Really appreciate you guys having me.
Great talk.
Various Hands record release party.
Yeah.
The Plush.
July 18th, Friday. 18th. We will have physical copies available, and then the record will be out worldwide on the 22nd.
There you go. So, and he's agreed to give me his guitar. So.
I don't know if I think I remember discussing this that.
All right. Well, man, thanks for coming on. That was an awesome talk, man.
Yes, it's fun. You guys have a good thing going here. I wish you lots of luck.
All right.
Appreciate it, man.
All right, so check out the EP, Various Hands.